Welcome to Salud Podcast, a podcast that focuses on bringing awareness to difficult conversations within the Latin community. We talk about stories in our comunidad and how we can all support each other to succeed. Ahora sí, pa seguir adelante con ganas. This is Salud Podcast, y hay que comenzar porque si no aquí vamos a estar todo el día.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Salud Podcast. One of the most important things that I always want to tell people is to take risks. I always want to tell them they should travel. They should go against whatever society has set forth. So I'm really excited that I got to catch up and talk to Graciela Flores, who will talk to us about her experience in the Peace Corps and her experience in the Philippines and how it literally changed her life. So we're going to get to know her, where she comes from, what she's about, and what she has learned throughout the Peace Corps. Trust me, this episode is going to be really good. I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you guys can go ahead and share it. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, @SaludPodcast, @SaludPodcast. And if you really like this podcast, make sure you leave a review, whether it be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and then share it. I would appreciate if y'all would share it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and listen to the episode, East LA a las Filipinas. Saludos! All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Salud Podcast. I'm your host, Jose Quintero, and here we come back with episode 3 of season 4 of Salud Podcast, obviously talking about these uncomfortable conversations and also highlighting amazing people that are doing just great things and highlighting not only their successes, but also their journey to get to where they are. So today I am honored to present to you guys, I want to say a chingona, who basically takes all the risks that I could possibly know, Graciela Flores. Welcome to Salud Podcast.
Hey.
How are you doing, Grace?
Hi, thank you for having me today. I'm really excited to be here. A little nervous because I've never heard my voice out loud like that, but I'm really excited to be here and just have this conversation.
Yeah, no, a lot of people don't know that, you know, doing podcasts, you obviously have your mic because that's how the noise transfers to the computer, but then you also have headphones. And if you're not used to hearing yourself, you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's a huge
echo. It's a first time.
There's always a first time for everything. Let's go ahead and get started because there's such a beautiful story and journey when we talk about Graciela. Obviously, I've known you for quite some time, and then we'll get into that a little further down the line. But I want to know, how was Graciela's life? How was Grace's life growing up, South Central LA? Because you really defied a lot of the odds in not becoming a statistic of South Central.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, that's interesting that you say, like, what's Graciela's journey? Because truthfully, I think I was Grace before I can become fully Graciela. And a lot of my friends know this, even like people I went to school with, high school, college. Like I went by Grace for a long time. And now I've really owned up to my name and fully embraced it. And now at work, in my church community, and then just with my friends now, most of them have now opted to call me Graciela. And that's because like, now I fully embraced it. It's like normal now to go to Starbucks and say Graciela instead of Grace to get my drink. But it's been a journey. I grew up in South Central and, you know, born and raised in LA. I went to school there. I'm the first generation college student, went to UCLA. And just thinking about my high school experience, I was very much like in two extremes all the time. And that's still true to my life now. But I was a huge nerd. Like I love school. And so I was so academically driven, but a lot of my friends were not. And so I was in honor school classes, but then my friends were like the little cholillos of the school or the gangbangers in the block. And we would like ditch class and we would drink. I like who drinks as a middle schooler, but but I was out here doing things that I should not have done. But it was, I mean, like we were tagging. Like we would ditch school and go tag in the walls and the restrooms. Like I would ditch class, jump the fence to go to like the protests that were happening at the time, like in terms of like
in
immigration. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's quite crazy.
Yeah.
when I look back at it, but a lot of my friends that were from middle school and then went to high school, like I was part of a group friend of like 12. And then slowly throughout high school, they all started to like drop out.
Oh, wow.
Like one by one. And then they have kids. And so like when we talk about statistics, like one in something, like I think it's like one in 10, like people of color, high schoolers will make it to college. That was like literally me. I was like the one friend that went to a university and then graduated.
Dang.
Which is like, I can tangibly see that. Like I can count my friends.
And as like little by little, as they started dropping out of high school and whatnot. I want to actually go back to your name just because I feel like it's so important in terms of identity. You said you wanted to go by Grace and not Graciela, even though that's which the name that your parents gave you. Was that something, because I see it a lot in terms of not fully embracing and not knowing what culture you belong to, especially as first generation born here in the United States with immigrant parents. It's sort of like, I want to assimilate into the American culture to a certain extent, but also not fully embrace the Latinidad that we each carry. Did you feel sort of repressed? Did it make you not as cool, or just you just didn't understand it at the time?
What it was for me was that I just wanted to make it easier on folks. Like, the reason why it was like, oh, just call me Grace, is just because they couldn't roll the R's. So I was like, yeah, whatever was easiest at the time is what it was more about than repressing it. But, like, in doing that, you are repressing your Latinas. So.
Yeah, I know, because it's interesting how much we have to repress and how many cultures, like, in all cultures, we have to repress because we make it so much easier for other people instead of learning it. If you think of the Asian community, how many of them have amazing names, but because other people can't pronounce it, they're like, just call me Joe.
Yeah, and it's like, well, bro, that's accommodating.
Yeah. So that's always interesting. Did you ever feel the need to continue to call yourself Grace instead of Graciela when it came to job interviews? Just because we sometimes tend to hear the whole, I know I did it. In college, I put Joe Quintero on a resume, and I will tell you, I got 9 out of 10 interviews as opposed to Jose. And it's the same. I sent both resumes. So I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you never had to go through that?
I never did it. No, I just kept Graciela. But to be fair, I my work is in the nonprofit world. So I think that there's always a high need for people in the nonprofit world, especially Spanish speakers. So I think that for me, it was never a difficulty in like keeping my name Graciela or changing it to Grace.
Did you ever start thinking like, oh, why are my friends dropping out? Should I follow in their footsteps? Because obviously these were your close friends. You were academically driven, but you still said, hey, I'm going to do these extracurricular activities with them. You didn't want
to
follow.
That's a nice way to put that.
Yeah, you didn't want to follow in their footsteps. Or what kept you going and motivated to not become a statistic? Because I think at such a young age, we still don't even know that term fully enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really great question. And I mean, now going through like also my faith journey, I can tell you that it was a lot of faith. I didn't know I had it at the time, but it was a lot of faith on the behalf of my parents. My dad was like my counselor. That's what I like to call him sometimes, because I found out about college, how to enroll, scholarships through my dad.
Wow.
And I was also very driven to leave my home. I am the oldest daughter of 4. So there's a lot of responsibility and burden that comes from that. And it is a burden, I like to say, because it is heavy on the person who has to carry it, and you don't prioritize your well-being. And so that's a difficult journey to go through. But I think part of that motivation was because I wanted to make sure that as an older sister, I was a good role model. And then making sure that I made it to college because I have a full family to look after as well. But also slightly selfishly wanting to run away because I knew college would be far away or at least far enough from home.
That you didn't have to deal with the issues at home on an everyday basis. You only had to do it over the weekend. Let's go ahead and now start that journey into college. And I find it so beautiful that
your dad motivated you. And you're speaking a lot about your dad. Was your mom super also into like, yes, mija, go to college? Or was it something very unfamiliar to her as well?
Yeah. No, my mom definitely encouraged college as well. For her, it was mostly like she just wasn't as knowledgeable. Mm. And it wasn't for her. Like, she didn't have that level of, like, engagement. Like, for her, it was just like, yeah, you know, I have to work, do things, and, like, care for you. But for my dad, he's, like, a learner. He loves to learn, so he reads books a lot, listens to the radio. What's his name? He loves this one guy that he listens in the radio, but I can't remember his name.
Spanish, English.
Yeah, he's a Spanish. Oh, he's in my dad speaks Spanish. Oh, yeah. but he, yeah, so he listened to all of this. I forget his name. I need it.
El Cucuy, El Piolín, Omar, y
no,
Angelia.
He's like a political commenter too.
Jorge Ramos?
No, not him. Oh. There's another one. I don't think he's low-key, but it's not Jorge Ramos.
Oh, okay. Well, then, dang. I know.
That's cool that you were going through the names. I was like, maybe you'll get it.
Because I was like, radio.
Yeah, he's radio. I don't know if he's from Mexico or what, but.
Oh my God. There's this.
It's going to like itch
I know
me.
I know it. Me too. Because there's a saying in Spanish of a news anchor, back to you, XYZ. And it's always a reoccurring joke. All the people who are listening who work in Spanish radio, they're probably like screaming the name out. And it makes me mad because it's probably him.
Probably. I'll get back to you on that, though, for sure. But he listens to him a lot, and he was just really invested in my education. So he wanted to, I think he knew that he lacked in other areas, like couldn't help me with his homework because he just didn't speak English. I think that there was areas that he just couldn't help me in. So his way of compensating was making sure that I knew that these were all the opportunities that I can take, and it was on me to pursue them and make sure that I was there. But he's just a learner, and me and my dad have a close relationship in that way. With my mom, it's more of a emotional connection too. I mean, moms, I think that's usually how it goes.
Yeah. How was their reaction when their firstborn eldest daughter got into UCLA?
Was
that a shock amazing. For you too?
I mean, I cried. I wasn't shocked. I was just like so happy that my hard work had paid off. And we were just extremely happy and grateful and just looking forward to what that meant and what it would do for our family.
Yeah. So
it was definitely a big, I screamed. UCLA was like the last like acceptance letter I got, which was so frustrating.
Really?
Yeah, because you know that's the only one I'm waiting for, really.
Which other ones did you apply to?
Like Long Beach.
Did you get into those?
I didn't get into Long Beach.
What?
It's just crazy. But Long Beach is very difficult to get into.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I'm like, that's fine. Yeah. I want to get into UCLA, really. But yeah, I applied to like a handful of colleges, like community college. Well, not community, Cal States.
At any point in time, did any teachers doubt you? Because obviously you were also hanging out with the wrong crew.
Yeah.
That they were like, how is this even possible? Or did they try to counsel you and be like, hey, Grace, like, you're doing so well academically, yet you're...
Yeah.
These are sometimes the stories of these great people that we see on TV, see as CEOs, and you're like, what? How did they turn their life around?
Yeah.
Even though so many people told them, hey, you're hanging out with the wrong crowd.
I think that's why I love my life trajectory so much.
Yeah.
Because I just, it's really sad that they had to like make an opinion of me because of the people I hanged out with. But also the people I hanged out with had like amazing hearts. Like they were so in tune with their values. Like they were just trying to figure out life. Like they were hurting, like they had family problems. Like it was just tough. Like, I mean, they had so many disadvantages that, it was very sad to see that adults were, you know, making an assumption of them and labeling them as such. But they could have been great people. Like, they could have been great learners. They just had so much happening at home that they couldn't. I was very thankful that while I had a lot happening at home, I still had really supportive parents and making sure that I made it through school. That's why I'm just like, it wasn't that I was hanging around bad people. It was just I was hanging around kids that were just going through a lot, but they're really amazing friends. They were always there for me till this day. Like my middle school friend is still around me. Her name is Evelyn. Shout out to her. She's amazing. And we're very close, and it's been I mean, middle school to like life now as an adult. A lot of the kids that I did go to in high school that were honor students were a lot more different that I just couldn't be friends with because it often felt like they were just like these like mini sharks.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, academic life was like their priority, but maybe they still had things going on at home, but obviously then maybe their coping skills were different.
Yeah. And I think it's a really beautiful thing you mentioning it because we have a lot of educators listening. And I'm so glad that the new generation of educators is more empathetic towards, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in every child's home specifically because every child is going to be different and you just never know what's going on that's really affecting them academically. Sometimes they haven't even had a meal.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't even have a place to sleep and you're already labeling them, like you said, as bad students because they are acting up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's beautiful that you're able to mention that. Let's get into UCLA. How was your first year in UCLA?
Wow. I mean,
because I think the first year in college is always like, I'm away from my parents.
Freedom. Yeah, no, it did feel like a lot of liberty. But at the same time, I mean, I had issues with like time management.
We all do money.
Figuring out what I to do. Like at the time, I was in a very toxic relationship. And I was just, it was a hard time for me.
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing, right? But then towards the end of the year, I was like, man, this is very hard. And just to be like absolutely honest, like I had a hard time for the next 2 years in college, my freshman year and my sophomore year. Like I was subject to dismissal from UCLA because I was just not meeting my
requirements.
GPA requirements. Yeah.
At any point, did you feel like you were disappointing your family? And because I always feel like, as Latino kids, we're always not thinking, like you said, of us. It's like, I should feel disappointed in myself, but no, I feel that disappointment from my parents, even though I haven't even told them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so heavy, but absolutely. I mean, I felt like I was I was losing a dream that wasn't just mine, but my family's.
Yeah.
I was really scared. No, I was like terrified, but I do want to thank my sorority.
Yeah.
Sigma Lambda Gamma, and the mentors that I had through them to getting me through college and making sure I graduated. because I, you know, I did graduate, so we're thankful for that.
And then how was the college life? You just mentioned your sorority, Sigma Lambda Gamma, obviously. My fraternity, Sigma Lambda Beta, were very close intact. Mm-hmm. Was you joining a sorority stigmatized within your Latina or Latino family, Latinx family?
They just didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. which with my brother, you know, I have a brother who's 2 years younger than me. I also introduced him to your fraternity and I was like, yeah, like you should totally do it. but my parents didn't know anything about it. And I just explained it to them as like, you know, brotherhood, sisterhood, and just like a network of people, even just family that you can lean on who have the experience that, you know, my parents don't.
Yeah, yeah. At any point, because I felt this way, you know, you're so enamored with the fraternity, sorority, life culture and your newfound family that you also tend to tend for your actual family.
Mm-hmm.
So because I remember like we had family gatherings, we had family events and I was like, oh, no, I'm going to go to Rosarito. Or I'm going to go XYZ. And now looking back in retrospect, I obviously don't take any of that back because it's made me who I am. But I also missed out on a lot of birthdays from my brothers or a lot of their process growing up for being a part of this organization, which did benefit me in the long run.
No.
Lucky.
I also want to say that I think that I was, I mean, I'm the oldest, so, I mean, I think you are too.
Yeah. I don't know. I just felt the burden. Like, because
I don't even know how to answer that.
My family's so close. And hey, we're going to have this. Like, your tía va a cumplir años. O tu
prima so you're close to your extended family too.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my mom's side.
Okay. Okay. I think that that's another, like, that's like another topic, not topic, but like a
layer.
Another layer of like, I'm super close to my family and I will always prioritize like my siblings' birthdays, parents' mm-hmm. birthdays. Like if sometimes our friends, I have three girls that are like my closest friends who are part of my sorority. And like birthdays overlap. So like, we'll make sure we go to each other's family's home to celebrate. Like we're just always present and making sure that like we're making time for everything. But for with my extended family, I'm close, but like they're not a priority to me.
Yeah.
Like my priority will of be course. My immediate family. No. And I'm like, I mean, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, also extended family is such a complicated subject because, you know, they love to chismear y,
give their two cents.
Give their two cents on everything. And I know that I live a very different life than a lot of my cousins do. Like, another thing that I had to, like, overcome in high school was just making sure that I wasn't a teenager who became pregnant because, like, most of my cousins did. And I was so adamant. I'm like, I'm not going to be that person. no shade to them, you know, like it happens. But I was just so like, never. Like, I'm going to make it through high school, not having a kid. College, not having a kid. I mean, I'm still an adult, not having a kid. But I made it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's awesome. And then, you know, part of your journey is also the risk that you've taken. The risk. And that have created beautiful opportunities. Any risks in high school that you think were pivotal in your life?
That's because this one digs a little deep.
Okay.
My parents growing up didn't have the best relationship. There was a lot of like arguments and disagreements. And for a bit, my parents separated. And my mom decided to move to Pasadena with help of like services that are out there mm-hmm. for women who need help, you know, raising their kids, like when they're wanting to separate from their husband. And so that was my like coming into my senior year of high school. And so we moved to Pasadena for a couple of months and I was just like devastated.
Of course.
Cause this is my senior year and, you know, I've worked so hard to try and get into college and, all these things I've done to be successful in school. And then my mom just like pulls me out. We leave. And I was so angry at her. And we had to go to therapy through this program that my mom had enrolled us in. And I was like, I hate this. And I was just so unhappy. And my mom could see that. I was like very visibly unhappy, super sad. And I was like, I've worked so hard. And looking back now, I mean, I'm a kid, but I'm just like this just brat, right? Yeah. My mom is going through stuff right now. And it's not my mom. It's just all my siblings going through things. And I'm over here thinking like me.
Being selfish.
Being selfish a little bit. And so at the third month, my mom, and, you know, there was always times where I would go to my mom like, we need to go back. Like, school is waiting for me. Like, this is my senior year. It's the most important year for me. I'm going to be applying to school for colleges. Like, at the time, I was nominated for the Posse Scholarship, which gives you a full ride. And I'm like, I'm missing these interviews. I'm like missing all this stuff. Like, how am I going to get into college now? Like, I was just devastated. And my mom was like, at the third month, was like, we're going to go back home.
Wow.
And I can just see it, you know, in her face, like just. Not wanting to, but like making that sacrifice.
Wow.
For me specifically. It's my siblings were adjusting so well, but for me specifically. And I think that's the fear now that I have in voicing my needs sometimes is that I'm being so selfish that like I'm not thinking about the needs of the family entirely. So it becomes very hard as an adult now
to
voice
now,
my needs.
Like, well, not voice your needs, but ask like.
Or ask, yeah.
How are you feeling? How are you doing? Is that something that you struggle with your immediate family, like your siblings?
I do still. I mean, that's something that I'm working on every day. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a lot more aware of it and conscious and very intentional in the way that I interact with my siblings. But of course, I mean, it's still a challenge. Yeah. I'm not perfect.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break, but we'll be right back after this.
You do it all without breaking a sweat. Like being a boss exec to Tuesday tennis to homework. Why do the kids have so much homework? Family dinners, lunches, brunches, trips to the vet, and a weekend getaway that's anything but a getaway. And you do it all in style. Even when you have back-to-back conference calls on top of the kids' orchestra recitals, not to mention your side hustle. That's why we created the fully reimagined Infiniti QX60, a luxury SUV as functional as it is stylish and as versatile as it is serene. With premium features like a panoramic moonroof, ample cargo space, and available massaging front seats to bring the ease of luxury to your everyday. Introducing the all-new Infiniti QX60, designed to help you take on life and all the chaos it may come with in style. Learn more at InfinityUSA.com. Now with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
So another, I think, turning point or was the end of college for you. You decided to take a risk and embark on, I think, a beautiful journey, a different journey, not one that is very common in first-generation Latino households. And I would even dare to say a very more white privileged scenario.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, talk to us about the Peace Corps.
Yeah, that was another risk for sure. As an older daughter of an American family, they're very dependent.
And a woman.
I mean, they're very dependent on me and like decisions I make, because I do make decisions for the family sometimes. I'm a constant facilitator between my parents and my siblings.
And it tends to happen. And a lot of families. And it's we adopt that role sometimes because we're bilingual, because we know that there's bad people out there trying to take advantage of our our family members because of the lack of language. So, and I mean, it they literally indoctrinated us young by, hey, what does this say? In like when they got mail. So it's like you start making decisions for them because your translation is the only source that they have at that moment.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So you become the decision maker because you're the one deciding what information you're giving and hoping to God that it's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're just a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God for him, because I feel definitely guided by him all the time. But yeah, going to the Philippines was such a difficult, it wasn't a difficult decision for me. Because again, like UCLA, I think Peace Corps was that for me, like a tiny escape from my family, a break where I was like, I need to go grow myself, and then I'm gonna become a better person for everybody in my family. But at the same time, you know, there's all these opportunities for me there. And so when I told my parents that I was going to leave, man, my mom, it's always my mom. My dad's like which is why I have the closest relationship with my dad, because he's just understands me in a way that I think my mom can never. But my dad immediately was like, of course, like, I get it. The thing that he told me, which I took to heart, was that you're going to go to the Philippines and you're going to experience a level of like disadvantage and poverty that you have experienced with us here. Like, we're low income family. We don't have a lot of privileges. But he's like, over there is going to be like times 100. Yeah. And you just got to know that you're going to see really hard things, and you're just going to have to be brave and be strong just be okay. That's going to be the hardest thing for you. And which absolutely was. And my mom was just like, ooh, Lord. My mom was like, cried. She's like, you're abandoning us. You're just, you don't like us. You don't love us.
Did you take that to heart?
I didn't.
Okay.
No.
That's
because
good.
I know how my mom is. I mean, it was hard to hear. But I knew that she was just afraid to let me go. And she was afraid to be without me for 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, which you think is not a long time, but then and then they pass and it's not a long time, but those 2 years of living without each other, without your family, and your family not having you, is very hard.
Yeah.
And at the end, you know, she gave me her blessings. She talked to her pastor and she was like, yeah, your daughter has to fly like a butterfly. And that's literally what she told me. She was like, I spoke with my pastor and you know, I came to my senses, and you're a beautiful butterfly, and you just have to go and fly and get me out of your cocoon. And I was like, thanks. Which I knew she would come around.
Yeah. So that butterfly got on the plane.
The cocoon got on the plane.
got on the plane. What was your first experience in the Philippines?
In the Philippines.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I was introduced to... So Peace Corps is a complicated program for a lot of people. It's very problematic. I mean, I spoke to a professor at UCLA about this program, and she was like, this is like manifest destiny. Like, this is like you taking U.S. politics into a foreign country that already has a lot of U.S. invasion and, you know, a lot of just things that people in the Philippines go through because the U.S., you know,
tries to assimilate them.
Yeah. Which you can see that. But I was like, it was such a hard topic because I was like, well, I got to go figure it out. I got to go look at it. I know this is an argument for a lot of people, but for me, it was like, I need to go see what that inside system looks like in order to know how I can break it and how to navigate it. Because, I mean, this is a system that I have to work with for years. I mean, I don't know when we're going to have like a revolution, you know, like, like, or something where we're like going to destroy this current system. But so I have to work with it, and I'm in the nonprofit world. I want to be a service to others. So I have to figure out how those systems work in order to know how to help other people and empower other people to navigate those same systems. So at the end I went, obviously, but that experience, that first experience too, getting there was amazing because a lot of the people who like welcomed us were the Filipino people there.
Yeah.
And all the staff are Filipino. Like, I mean, obviously the leadership roles as always are white people. But like the rest of the staff were Filipinos, and my experience with the volunteer was a lot different. I think I had a conversation with you about this, but there were, most of them were white.
Yes.
That was hard. That,
so talk to me, because I remember, if I recall, there was a period where it was a beautiful transition. Like, I guess, I don't know if it was the first 3 months where they were teaching you the culture, the language. You weren't sent to your actual location where you were going to be. So was that, I guess you would say, the nicer part of the Philippines and the nicer part of the easier part of the Peace Corps until you were actually placed in the town or city that you were supposed to be at?
That was actually the hardest part.
Because you were in Cebu, right?
Yeah, I was in Cebu City for my actual volunteering 2 years. Okay. So yeah, with the Peace Corps, we have 2 years of service, volunteer work, and then 3 months of training that come before the service. But for me, the training was the hardest because I was around my fellow volunteers.
Who were ignorant.
Who were very ignorant, yeah, who were mostly white. So they have a different level of exposure than I do. I mean, part of our training for my specific group, because there's 3 programs within that program, and I was part of the children and family. I forgot what it even stands for. But it was like children and family development. And it was not development, but
it's
something along those
already
lines.
Since you've been back, so.
It's true. But
this pandemic makes it seem
pandemic,
like 4
it's
years.
Like, God, seriously, it's been so long.
Yeah.
But part of that specific training is that they take us to the most, like,
underserved
communities, like poverty at its like closest, and it's really intense.
How
like
traumatic.
Super intense. But the thing is that we're going on this walk, on this community walk that's very impoverished, and we're being led by a community member, and this person is like amazing. Like, they're so empowered. They're like, we're doing all of these amazing things for our community. It's like, it's like incredible. Like, we should be amazed that they're like, they've done all this and they're welcoming us to their home. But, and then at the end, we have like a whole processing group. And I know this is also me, my young self, who's so self-righteous and have like this vision of like perfection almost. But
you're like, I'm going to change this.
Yeah, I'm going to change this whole, world, or like these volunteers and their mindset. But we have this processing group at the end where we process everything we just experienced. And a lot of people felt like we were on a zoo.
No
being
way.
Like like showing, it's like, because they felt like our program manager was taking us in this community and looking at people as if they were zoo animals. Which there's been, I've had an experience with a close friend where we went to New York and our white professor took us around New York showing us like, this is this and this is this. And she felt like this is a zoo. Like you're taking us to the most impoverished parts of New York and showing us like how urban challenges are. But I can understand why in that situation it was that, because that was a white professor and we didn't have anybody in the community. And we were in fact like almost being kicked out of a building because like you have no permission to be here. But in the Philippines, the context is a lot different. Yeah. Like we have a community member showing us around, telling us their story of how empowered they are and all the challenges that they overcome.
They're not being, I mean, they know the situation they're in and they don't feel ashamed.
Exactly.
They're sharing
that. They're welcoming you into their world of... And instead, you have to, like, demean that almost or belittle that.
That experience.
That experience by saying that it was a zoo experience.
That, oh, my God. That the level of ignorance. Like, I totally understand if it was a white counterpart showing you around, it's like, well, you don't even know the culture.
And you weren't even welcome there.
Yeah, versus an actual community. Yeah. Like, you're just diminishing their entire history, their culture, their roots, what they're proud of, the little baby step accomplishments that they've done along the way to be... I guess you could say like a community member showing Americans around, you know, because I think that in itself, you know, takes a level of experience and practice to get there.
It was very hard to witness. And
did you raise your hand? Like
I totally blurred out. Like I went on a rant. I was so quote unquote unprofessional. I was very angry. And I think a lot of my volunteers, peer volunteers, thought that I was just this angry Latina, constantly upset about a lot of stuff. I didn't make very much friends there, which is fine. I didn't come to make friends with other Americans. I went to the Philippines because I wanted to be of service to the Filipino people and just be honored to experience their culture.
At that moment, did you feel the stereotypical stigma of a Latina, like, wow, loud?
Loud. Yeah. Angry, upset, fiery. Absolutely. But I own it.
It's passion. And it's passion because you not only saw these people in those communities, you identified. You literally was like, that's me. That's my tia. That's this family member. Like you saw a reflection of yourself.
Yeah. So I think that's why I projected so much anger. Because I was very upset.
And they just didn't understand it coming from a white picket fence.
I mean, obviously, And then they couldn't. And that's, I can't hold that too much against them.
Do you think that's an issue within the Peace Corps? Just hiring privileged or not hiring, allowing volunteered people from privileged communities and not really filtering out.
It's just not enough. It's not enough people of color applying. I mean, there's only like 3% of Latinos go to Peace Corps. For African Americans, it's like 8%.
Did you see a lot more older white men and women, or was it younger?
A large population of the Peace Corps volunteers are like straight out of college kind of age. There are older volunteers, but there's not that many.
And then how was that experience when you were actually placed within your, I think, community center? Because you worked with women and children. And, you know, you taught them health, fitness tips, HIV, right? Resources. So how was that experience?
That was a lot more amazing. I knew that I'm very adaptable. And I knew that once I made it there, I would be okay, which was the case. I adapted really quickly. I love Filipino food. Oh, it's just so delicious.
Did you try the I've always wanted to try the... The duck.
Yes. What is the egg? Balut. I think it's called balut.
Okay, okay. Yeah. How was that? Because from what I heard...
I don't want to eat it again.
Okay, because it still has feathers, right?
There's different types. Different, like, depending on what month they are, I think.
What?
Yeah, you could have a not fully developed duck.
Just like an egg.
Yeah, or in the embryo.
Okay.
And then... you could get one with feathers.
And wow. Wait, are they cooked or not?
They are-ish, okay. Yeah.
That is such a
culture.
It tastes
like chicken soup, though. Like, okay. The little, like, the caldo in the egg tastes like chicken soup.
And I always find that amazing.
I just didn't want to eat them.
But because we're not accustomed to it. Like, we didn't grow up with that. And I'm pretty sure if you, I don't know, give a person in the Philippines menudo, they'd probably be like, what is this?
Yeah, menudo is intense. It's also, like, a really intense flavor. And, like, it stays on your... on your mouth a little, but it's so good.
Yeah. But I think it's the exact same thing. But talk to me, how long were you with that community center group?
Well, I did two community centers. One, it was a foundation, and I was there for a little less than a year, maybe 8 months. And then the nonprofit that I went to afterwards was a maternity clinic. Their name was Glory Reborn, and I was there for the rest of my remaining time. And they were amazing.
How fast or did you learn the language?
Yes. Oh, Lord. I wish I still remember. But through my training, I mean, we have to take a test. Uh-huh. And we have to pass it in order to continue our service. So I became conversational in Tagalog. Uh-huh. And once I went to Cebu, I totally forgot the Tagalog. I had to learn Cebu. Oh, Cebuano.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah. Different dialect.
It's a different dialect. Yeah.
No way.
So I just forgot everything.
How different is the Cebuano? Cebuano and Tagalog.
I mean, they're similar, but there's like certain words that are just different.
It's like Spanish and Spanglish type
No. It's more like, I wouldn't even say.
English
even
and
know.
British? And there are some words that cross over?
Maybe. I don't know. No. I mean, it's like any dialect. It still resembles its main language, but there's just variations to the way they say it. It's almost like in Latin America, right? Like we have Guatemalans and like Hondurans having different kind of slang or the word meaning the same. Like popote can be like straw is just three different ways sorbete. Of saying it. Yeah, and sorbete. Saying it.
Yeah, no. Okay.
That's, like that would be some, like I would kind of explain the different dialects in Cebu or like the Visayas. So, you know, the Philippines has like three main regions. But one of them is the Visayas, is where I lived. So that's the only one I know. Well, there's also Mindanao, which is not the safest place to be because that's where a lot of like the drugs like challenges are happening there.
Yeah. And so learning the language was one thing. How about writing the language? Was that easier or harder?
No, I mean, equally difficult for me.
But you were immersed. Like, did you have a family that you stayed with?
Yes. So, I mean, I learned I could say, like, also because it was very similar to Spanish, so I can remember certain things
like
of, like, yeah, or, like, ¿Cómo está acá? Which is, like, how are you? ¿Cómo estás? But it's with a K, and it's spelled a little bit different, but it's ¿Cómo está acá?
Oh, okay. I only know a couple words. From high school, one of my close friends from high school, it was like salamat, walang anumang.
Yeah.
And then obviously the bad words.
Yeah, thank you and you're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can get around like transportation like here or there. But most of it, I can understand it. Like if I hear, which now, like if I go around the community, like wherever I go, if I can hear some Tagalog, I'm like, they're Filipino.
Like,
I get really
them.
Excited, but then I'm like, you know, mind my own business.
Yeah,
I'm like,
course.
Respectfully stay away. but I get really excited because I can still register it in my mind. I just can't understand it entirely.
What was the hardest part about that experience besides, you know, the ignorance
of white people?
Yeah.
The hardest part, I mean, was just the guilt that I felt. And the beautiful experiences I was having in the Philippines and that I couldn't share with my family.
Mm.
It was mostly that. Honestly, my experience with Filipino people were amazing, incredible. They're super hospitable, loving, super affectionate, which is something that, like, is specific in my household. Like, we weren't very affectionate growing up. I mean, now we're becoming more. But growing up, I didn't have that. And I'm not affectionate, but I know that I want to be.
Is that your love language?
Well, yeah, physical touch is my love language. So I know that I appreciate when people are affectionate to me. And I learned that more in the Philippines because people always were grabbing my arm. When we laughed, we touched each other's shoulders or lap. Like, it was always this sense of, like, loviness constantly and being and it, you know, it was being shown. Mm. Like, I appreciate you for being here.
That's amazing.
And they were just always dancing, which, you know, it's beautiful to experience because joy is just a part of their everyday life, even though they're going through a lot of hardships. Mm-hmm. And then they're super faithful.
Yeah.
And I mean, I learned that from them.
Yeah.
Just having faith in everything that you do.
Did you have some resistance? Because we'll go back in a bit, but did you have some resistance embracing that faith? You mentioned that, like, you know, deep down inside you had it somehow, yeah, but you just never embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
But did you have some resistance there?
I didn't, because when I first got to the Philippines, I was like, man, like, this seems an opportunity to learn some mm-hmm. things and be vulnerable and open to whatever
yeah
will show up. And so there wasn't any resistance. Also, people were just, they weren't pushing it on me.
Yeah.
They weren't like, here, like, listen to me. They were just like, okay, like, yeah, whenever you want to talk, we're here. It was almost like counseling, like, or therapy, like if you were in a mental health program, like, hey, like, we're just here to chat whenever you're ready. Yeah. And I was like, cool, thanks. And obviously I was going through stuff, so uh-huh. I had to reach out in order to be better.
Yeah, yeah. And then it ended.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was so sad.
The last, like, because you had an end date. You had an expiration mm-hmm. date. Did you slowly start, like, obviously, I think when there's, like, 2 months left, you really try not to think about it. But then when there's a month,
yeah,
3 weeks, 2 weeks,
yeah,
the day before, you're like, this is it.
Mm-hmm. It was...
How was that coping?
It was hard. But I also knew that I was going to leave and then come back. Mm-hmm. So Glory Reborn is a faith-based organization. And they're just amazing because you would think... Well, not you, but if you come from a background where you have... Where the church hasn't been well to you or they've done things that... Which they've have. That aren't good, that disrespect people, that invade people's space. You think that a nonprofit that was faith-based would also be almost like discriminatory and like not accepting. But with this nonprofit, like, we had family planning conversations. Like, we empowered women to make decisions on their own, even though, like, in the Philippines, like, their partner's decisions lays very strongly. So it was just such an openness of, like, breaking, like, just stereotypes and making sure that people just receive the health and the quality of, like, health that they needed and deserve. So when I left, I knew that I was going to come back because I got really, really close relationships with friends there. And one of them was getting married.
Yeah.
So I also decided to travel by myself for 3 months. And so I went and traveled, and then I came back to this wedding that was amazing and beautiful. And leaving that day was also hard, but, like, I knew I would go back. Like, yeah, the Philippines is, and I knew that when I first went into the Peace Corps and saying, like, oh, yeah, we know people talk about, like, their host country becoming, like, homes. I'm, yeah, like, my home is always where my parents are at.
Yeah.
And that's, like, South Central LA. Like, that's my home for me. It's, like, where my family is at. And then through my whole experience in the Philippines, like, Cebu City, now I'm just like, that's absolutely a home.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, like, work with them.
Yeah. It allowed you to be more vulnerable and to learn more about your own self, you know, something that maybe you haven't given yourself the opportunity to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you went with that mindset, like, you know what, I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm just going to learn and absorb and see what comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's beautiful. Before we move on, I want to ask, was there any moment that you had to, you know, the righteous Latina in you, that you had to put your foot down? You said the Philippines is a very, like, male-driven decision-making society. But was there a moment where you're like, yo, she has a say, or that you had to put your foot down in between?
No.
Oh, that's.
I also feel like that would be disrespectful.
Okay.
Cool. My opinion.
Okay.
Because the thing is that,
like, if you were seeing it and something unjust, and you're like, oh, no.
No.
Well, then
I also feel like I didn't see a situation like that.
Well, then that's a good
thing. Which is, yeah, which I say, like, my experience just with the Filipino people was, like, always good. I mean, there was also because Filipino culture is very similar to Mexican culture. Mm-hmm. So for me to pivot in situations like that is easy. Mm-hmm. Like I know what in a super like strict, like almost my mom is very gender norm. Like, mm-hmm. like she wants us to follow gender norms. I mean, I've kind of like opened her mind over the years.
Yeah.
But I know like in the Philippines, like gender norms are also really like enforced, but also like on the surprising end, people like dress however they want. Like yeah. there's a lot of self-expression. So it's almost like tolerance, but also acceptance of people being willing to accept however anybody. I mean, people are still like kind of on the end mm-hmm. saying things to other people, how you would like also in Mexican culture, right? Like,
yeah.
We kind of talk behind people's back like, or like fake compliment people, but they were like, I'm like, did you see their shirt? But it's also, but it's an acceptance at the end yeah. of the, I guess maybe it's almost tolerance,
yeah.
but we're trying to get to acceptance.
Of course, of course.
Next time on Salud Podcast.
You were a really like significant part of my life because like that special thing we had wouldn't yeah. be the same. The experience that you gave me when we were together, I was just very curious to see how I would feel about you. I had no emotional attachment to anything
yeah.
or anybody.